A world first. FirstRand has become the first commercial bank anywhere in the world to issue a bond whose payout is tied to nature. A 2.5 billion Rand note on the JSE that pays investors more if invasive trees are cleared from the mountains that feed Cape Town's dams. I'm joined by three people close to the deal. Louis Stafford leads the Nature Conservancy in South Africa and has run the clearing on the ground since the Water Fund began in 2018. Martin Potgieter is the Natural Capital Director at RMB and led the team that structured and arranged the bond. And Colin Porteous is the CIO of the Peace Parks Foundation, one of Africa's largest conservation organizations, founded in 1997 by Nelson Mandela, Prince Bernard of the Netherlands, and Anton Rupert. Louise, let's start with you. I'm curious on how day zero back in 2018 in Cape Town affected the formulation of the Cape Water Project. How has it since developed into what we are seeing now with the RMB note?
Yeah, thanks. In 2018, the water bond or the Cape Town Water Fund was in design. And we were doing it during a time when the city faced day zero. And a water fund is a funding and governance mechanism to fund work in catchments. And we did the business case in 2018 where we saw, where we ran models, and the models have shown us that investing in nature is the most cost-effective way of augmenting water. So in 2018, the dams were about to run dry, but the catchments were invaded by alien trees. It started raining in about July 2018, and we avoided day zero. Since then, we worked with the City of Cape Town to put the business case into action, and we started with clearing invasive trees in the catchments in 2018, and since then we've cleared 40,000 hectares and we reclaimed over 36 billion liters of water into the catchments. But that's not enough, and that's where the water bond comes in, because we have a target of 55,300 hectares, and if we clear that, we can reclaim about 2 months' water supply for Cape Town at the fraction of the cost of grey infrastructure.
Sure. And what's unique to this, Martin, is that this isn't an ordinary debt. On top of a floating JIBAR coupon, investors earn performance-based success payment. Can you walk us through how that's structured and how that upside is captured?
Yes, Irakli, what we wanted to get right from the beginning is we wanted investors' returns to be positively correlated with the underlying project. Our intention is, if we're going to get a lot more capital market funding into the world of nature, we must get the investors to start thinking about nature as an asset class. So that positive performance was absolutely critical for us. I will also say that internationally, there's a growing market of these outcomes bonds. So we were the first commercial bank anywhere in the world to do it. But the World Bank has issued some of these outcomes bonds, and we pretty much followed their recipe. It's a recipe that works. It's a recipe that the large institutional investors are happy to follow. And it is also one where we believe the governance and the alignment and all the stakeholders are set up to understand and start appreciating nature in the right manner. So how all of these outcomes bonds work is with the objective of attracting large capital market players. This cannot be concessional funding. It just cannot be. It cannot be that we can never go to a large institutional manager and ask them for concessional money, because they are fiduciaries. They're looking after the money of their own investors. So how these bonds work is we do pay the investors over the 5 years of the bond a coupon that is less than they used to from the same issuer, and that money then funds or part funds the underlying project. Then at the end of the 5 years, we test the success of the project. And depending on the success, we start increasing the investor returns. What is important to know, though, is if we take 50 basis points or 100 basis points away from the investors, these investors will want to get that back, but they need to get a little bit more than that back because they now run the risk of underperformance. So there has to be some sort of a carrot of outperformance as well, some way for them to get some level of outperformance. So what we did in our water bond, and the similar thing is happening in the global dollar bonds, is we take 50 or 100 basis points away. And then when we get to a certain level of success, we give all of that back. And therefore, you perform in line with the normal borrowings of the issuer. And then when you get to a full level of success, things get quite exciting because you earn alpha from an issuer that otherwise it would be quite hard to earn that alpha. This money, where does it come from? How is it funded? Because remember, when the issuer pays a lower coupon on the bonds, it's not a saving for the issuer because that money is all being used to fund the underlying project. So we find an outcomes-based funder, which is normally a third party that comes in at the back end to pay for the increase in investment returns. Now, what's interesting about the outcomes-based funder is there's a few things to think about there. The one that we are particularly excited about is that in our water bond, 75% of the outcomes-based funding came from entities that's never before funded nature. And that is now starting to get to our objective, which is to get a lot more money into funding nature, biodiversity, and water, and to get new pools of funding in, not just to tap the existing pools. The intention of our bonds is to attract a lot more hard currency funding. We think a sign of success for us will be if we can attract a lot more dollar and euro funding into the funding of our big projects here in Africa. I mean, this creates a very responsible channel because it's got perfect accountability. If someone gives us money for a project and the project doesn't work, then either that entity will not pay for it, or they will get their money back, because remember, in that instance, the investors will pay for the project because it will fail and their coupon will remain at a slightly lower level.
So there is that backstop. There's also the element of being independently verified, and you mentioned the Rhino bond as the template prior to that. Can you walk us through the mechanics of how investors know when the hurdles or the benchmark has been reached by the success outcome?
Yeah. Yes, Irakli. So I think what's important to note there is that I'm a banker, and even though, like many South Africans, I like spending time out in the bush, I'm not a trained scientist. On the other hand, a Louise and a Colin work for implementers where there's a whole host of scientists and they're used to implementing, but we don't always talk the same language. So in the Rhino bond and also in our water bond, we used someone called a design agent, and for us it was Conservation Alpha, which is an entity that sort of translates between the two entities to make sure we get the highest quality project. And also that entity can then verify. So both in the Rhino bond and in our water bond, that entity is also verifying. And I'll quickly talk through how important verification is, because if we get to the end of the 5 years and there's a dispute around how many hectares have been cleared or how many rhinos there are, then it can become quite difficult if you don't have the required evidence to show or demonstrate what it really was like. I'm a banker. I can't go and count how many rhinos there are or how many hectares have been cleared. And the implementer will clearly never lie about it, but there is an incentive for them to go one way or the other. So alignment is not perfect. So we get someone in that we call a verification agent, which is similar, I guess, in a way to an auditor for a company. And in the case of rhinos, what you would have to do is a scientific model to say that, okay, each rhino is identified in a certain manner by a notch that it has on its ear, and you need photo evidence of that rhino being alive and or a new rhino being born and added to the population, and you actually can see that every year it gets reported, and at the end of 5 years it gets reported back. In our case, we've got two things. We've got photo evidence from every hectare that gets cleared with georeferencing on it, so you can, for example, see a little mountain or a little geographical feature in the back. The before and after photo, the tree was there and now the tree is no longer there. And then also because we want to start a principle of what we call water credits, which needs perfectly accurate measurement of what was there before and after, not through two-dimensional photos, but through three-dimensional video, which is done by drones. So we fly drones, we get LIDAR, and in about one in every 4 hectares of the water bond, we're going to have LIDAR footage that shows perfectly each tree there. It will have an identification feature to say that this is the kind of tree that there was, and then afterwards as well. And that will then be used at the end so that no investor can come and say to us, that you actually took out more trees than you claimed, and therefore the performance should be better, because we've got perfect measurement, and it's not done by ourselves or by the implementer, but by an independent verification agent.
So technology is playing a vital role here in making sure that that independent verification is at play.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's critical.
And Colin, as you hear this and as this door has been opened with the water bond, where do you see this going further or next with respect to conservation and nature as a whole from your viewpoint?
The question is, how do you generate that buyer? Where is that buyer? How do we expand the pie? From Xbox's perspective, we've done a large 10-year forecast supported by McKinsey. We're looking at about $700 million over the next 10 years in order to create an effectively managed portfolio. Now, that is not something that can be absorbed solely by philanthropy. And historically, that is the way the conservation is funded. What we're trying to do is create an instrument which attributes that value. And my long-term goal is to ensure that the investor themselves is placing value, financial value, on that non-financial benefit which is coming out of these areas. So as an impact investor would look at it, they would be prepared to look at a reduced return plus a demonstration of benefit.
What I'm hearing is that now that the door is open, there's almost opportunity now for these financial instruments to gain ground now that the first one is done. And in your view, Martin, do you see more conservation bonds coming in play, to Colin's point around how the mix of funding is now shifting away from grant funding now that the pie is growing?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Irakli. I see a lot of these happening. What's interesting is the World Bank has done a few, but I think a lot of investment banks were looking at them doing it, wondering how they can get it done. And so I'm very happy that we were able to do it. We've been called by a bank in Colombia. We've been called by project developers out in Australia. Pretty much from every part of the world, people are now saying, how do you get that done and how can we replicate that? I want to talk about the problem that we have. And the problem is that that conservation and nature biodiversity is oftentimes seen as a nice to have as opposed to a critical need to have. But a lot of the time, our ecosystems around us are the infrastructure behind the infrastructure. And a good example of that is the project that we're doing for the water bond. It supports the water getting into the dam, because remember, if the mountains and the catchments are overgrown, then the water doesn't get to the dam. So we can fix all of the downstream water treatment plants and pipes. But if you don't have water in the dam, then actually there's no point in having the grey infrastructure. So the green infrastructure is critical for our economy and for all of our business activities. But the problem that we do have is that typically the funders are government, tourists, and philanthropists. So there's three pools of funding. And how can you increase them? You can maybe increase them by 10 to 20% per year if you're really lucky. But that's not enough. That might be enough for, if you're thinking conservation, that might be enough for the Kruger Park and Serengeti and the Okavango Delta. But what about all of those other critical biodiverse areas where there's no tourist income, the governments don't have the funding to pay for it, and philanthropy is maybe busy somewhere else? And the problem with the current model we have is there's very little information flowing from the one side to the next. And when the money starts flowing, it only flows in one direction. And can you think of any capital market where those features are present? I don't think so, because normally you have information flowing all the time and you have funding also flowing between different parties. You put money into a company and then later you expect your money to come back. So we need to change that. We need to change that funding model and make it look a lot more like a capital market that we're more familiar with. And for that, we don't need just these outcomes bonds that we discuss, and we need debt for nature swaps. We need biodiversity credits. We need nature positive carbon credits. We need all of these instruments that people are busy designing. And then ultimately, that will hopefully give us a capital market that looks a lot more like the ones that we are more familiar with. And because we need to times the amount of money going into nature conservation, biodiversity by 40, 50, maybe 100 times. And it is not just for people to go look at wildlife, which is great, but that actually underpins the air that we breathe. It underpins the health of our soil. And then clearly the amount of water that we have in our taps.
Fascinating. Thank you so much. We have a bond that pays out when a river runs full. Louis Stafford, Martin Portgieter, Colin Porteous, thank you for joining us. This is BizNews. I'm Irakli.
In uncertain times, good information is priceless. The BizNews Conference is heading back to the Drakensberg. Join me, Alec Hogg, from the 11th to the 14th of August for BNC 9, Champagne Sports Resort, where it all began and where our community gathers for honest conversations, smart investing insights, and direct access to some of South Africa's sharpest minds. Come and rub shoulders with the best we've got. 28 keynote speakers, 3 days. Seats are available now. Book your seat by clicking the link in the description. Start your day a step ahead. BizNews Insider. It delivers the business stories that matter every morning straight to your inbox. Sharp, fast, and free. Subscribe now.